of him. Like so many others, Salem and Karim fled from their home in Jabalia refugee camp, northern Gaza, during the current genocidal war. They took shelter at Ashifa, Gaza's largest hospital. They were inside the hospital when it was stormed by Israeli regime forces on March 18th. Salem recalled how he spent the following week waiting to die. Quadcopter drones were firing widely, striking anything that moved, he said, adding, "The Israelis smashed the glass in the windows and destroyed the walls in the department where we were hiding. A shell fell on us and killed my son in front of my eyes," he said. "I could not save him. He bled to death." The situation in Salem's wards was worse than hell. Among the terrible scenes he witnessed were Israeli regime tanks driving over the bodies of people who had been killed in the hospital's courtyard. Because the hospital could not function, infection soared among people who were wounded. In many cases, injured people were devoured by worms due to the lack of treatment. After the hospital had been under siege for approximately a week, the Zionist regime forces used loudspeakers to summon everyone in the courtyard. The Palestinian men were ordered to strip. They were beaten. Women were subjected to both verbal and physical abuse, according to Salem. Salem recalled that he trembled in horror when one of the soldiers called my name. He was interrogated for around 48 hours. "I was not allowed to sit down or turn to the left or right," he said. "My hands were tied behind my back. I was blindfolded and completely naked." Salem added that he repeatedly heard gunfire and that his interrogator threatened to kill my wife, who is ill and lives with her family in northern Gaza, if I did not cooperate. He said, "Throughout the interrogation, I was thinking about where the soldier would shoot me, in the head, chest, or heart. I did not believe him when he said the interrogation was over. I realized that I had miraculously survived death." Salem was given a choice of evacuating to southern Gaza or being killed. Before leaving, Salem asked that he be allowed to see the body of his son, Karim, 13. Salem wanted to say a final goodbye and bury his child. The Israeli regime forces rejected his request. Salem said, "I never expected that I would lose him at such an early age. He was a handsome boy who loved football and dreamed of becoming a famous player." Salem had to walk for hours until he reached Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city. Although some counseling has been arranged for him in Rafah, it is clearly inadequate given the trauma he and so many others are going through. Salem now finds himself without his wife and is struggling to accept the reality that his son is dead. The Zionist regime had completely destroyed the hospital by the time its forces withdrew in the early hours of Monday. Karim Baraka is among several hundred people who were slaughtered during Israel's two-week siege on Ashifa. The child killer regime of Israel's attack on the hospital is one of the worst massacres in Palestinian history. It is a crime against humanity, committed after the International Court of Justice had instructed the Zionist regime to stop killing Palestinians. Meanwhile, Middle East Eye reported hours after Israeli regime forces ended their siege on Ashrafa Hospital, Palestinians are facing the difficult task of trying to locate survivors buried under rubble without search and rescue teams. Hundreds of displaced Palestinians returned to their homes near Ashrafa Hospital recently to find bodies strewn inside and outside the facility after Israeli regime forces withdrew from the area. Earlier in the day, the Zionist regime forces ended their 14-day siege of the hospital, leaving Gaza's largest medical complex in shambles and entire neighborhoods in ruins. The Israeli regime army claimed its devastating offensive was a success and said without providing any evidence that its forces had killed more than 200 Palestinian fighters and arrested hundreds more. But locals told Middle East Eye that the raid had decimated much of the sprawling Ashrafa hospital complex and nearby residential areas, with scores of civilians trapped amid the rubble of crumbled apartment blocks. Hundreds of locals who converged on the area found the scene of devastation, with charred buildings, mounds of dirt that had been churned up by bulldozers and wounded Palestinians on stretchers. Local resident Ahmad Abdulwahid told MEE that he spent much of the morning with his friends searching through the ruins of the four-story tower block where his family once lived in the hope of finding loved ones still alive. Several members of Abdulwahid's family are still missing following the Zionist regime's devastating siege on the neighborhood, including his sister and four of her young children. Picking through the rubble and twisted metal of their home with his bare hands, he said the bodies of four Palestinians were recovered after a lengthy search. Nearby, corpses, some covered in dirty blankets, lay scattered around the charred hulk of burnt-out buildings. The ground was heavily plowed up, and numerous buildings were either flattened close to falling or burnt down completely. Abdulwahid told MEE, "I went to my sister's house with a friend, but their home was completely destroyed. We managed to recover four bodies out of 24. There is no civil defense or tools, excavators, so we had to use our hands and simple tools. The ones we managed to rescue were close to the surface."
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Libya is a North African country, frequently in the news over its political stalemate. The country has two competing governments, the Tripoli-based High State Council and the House of Representatives in the eastern city of Tobruk. The hopes of these two sides will unite for the good of the country. Libya is also at the center of a migrant crisis. The total number of migrants landed in Italy from Libya last year was approximately 51,700, of which 16,500 came from the eastern region of Libya. This country is also one of the richest countries in Africa in terms of oil reserves. Libya is now trying to ramp up its petroleum output and draw foreign investors back to its vast oil fields. Meanwhile, amid the U.S.-Israeli genocide on Gaza, Libya has voiced support for the measures taken by the International Court of Justice, ICJ, to prevent genocide in the Gaza Strip. Elsewhere, under the deposed dictator Muammar Gaddafi, controversial incidents took place in Libya, including the disappearance of Lebanese scholar Imam Moussa Sadr. Internationally, Libya enjoys cordial ties with many countries, including Iran. Officials say the cooperation between these two Muslim nations are on the right track and can develop in various fields.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today. This week, we have a special guest to discuss issues relating to Libya. We are honored to have with us here in the studio, His Excellency Ali Juma Al-Obeidi, the ambassador of Libya to Iran. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for your time.
Thank you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of God, I have to thank Press TV for this opportunity that has been provided for me to explain the Libyan stance regarding regional and international issues.
Let's start off with the Iran-Libya relations. What is the current status of ties between these two friendly countries?
Diplomatic relations between the two sides have developed immensely. They have reached levels that can only be described as outstanding, which is caused by various factors. The most prominent being the desire of the two countries to strengthen these alliances because developing positive relations between countries of the Islamic world makes them stronger and more resilient. During my time in Tehran, I worked on decreasing the sources of tension and developing relations in the interest of my country, Libya, and also the interests of the cordial Iran and the Arab and Islamic region in general.
Mr. Ambassador, you know, nowadays countries are more inclined towards trade. Now, what is the current status of trade ties between Iran and Libya? Are there plans to boost ties in this regard?
Trade relations between the two countries are developing at a slow pace. This is not caused by the Libyan side, since we are open to developing economic relations with Iran, who are friendly. But the Iranian side has some hesitation, or what can be described as not daring to enter quickly and firmly into the Libyan market. We are a country emerging from a war. Therefore, anyone who does not secure their place economically with us will not find a foothold in the future. On that account, the brothers in Iran must be aware of this matter. It is worth noting that Libya is a country rich in diverse economic opportunities. It is possible for Iran, which possesses experience and development in many fields, to summon up Iranian businessmen who will find many job opportunities, starting with medium investments that do not require large capital all the way to strategic investments, which Libya desperately needs.
I understand you have written a book, and this book is about relations between Arab countries and Iran. Can you tell us more about this book which you have written?
This book was published in 2023 and talks about the relations between Iran and some Arab countries such as Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia and Palestine. I have divided the relations into two parts, the Shah's era and after the Islamic Revolution.
When you presented your credentials to Iran's President Raisi, he said that the problems of Libya and some Islamic countries are caused by the presence of interference of foreigners. What's your opinion on this point?
Certainly, the presence of foreigners in our region is not welcome. It is a source of anxiety and tension. But what is the alternative? This question must be posed to all active forces in the region. These forces must conduct rounds of dialogue and understanding amongst themselves to prevent foreigners from interfering. There is a proverb that says, "The people of Mecca know best about its paths." The people of the Arab and Islamic region know best how to resolve their conflicts, which is contingent on direct understandings and the diffusal of any tension in the region. For example, we in Libya, despite all the religious, social, political, and cultural rapprochement with our neighbors in the ocean, have some disagreements, let alone countries that are somewhat different in many aspects. Therefore, this matter must be taken into account and understood. Disputes are resolved with understanding, not by postponing them.
Mr. Ambassador, let's move on to the situation inside Libya. Now, many in Africa love Libya and hope to see a lasting peace and stability in this country. Now, what is the state of politics in terms of creating conditions for holding national elections and forming an inclusive government which will bring together all Libyans?
Libyan history testifies that Libya was a place of friendship with the African and Arab surroundings. It was looking for calm in Africa because it is a continent rich in human and material resources. As for the political conditions in the country, right now, the various Libyan parties, and I will not describe them as conflicting ones since the conflict is over, thank God. Now, there are only differences of opinion. Thus, the differences between the two sides began to be resolved and the groundwork for holding elections is beginning to take shape, but the realization of this depends on the seriousness of the Libyan political parties.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Ambassador, there's been talk about uniting the rival factions in Tobruk and Tripoli. Can we expect good news in the near future regarding this?
Yes, we will see positive news in this subject in the near future. The ice of differences between the two sides began to melt, especially after the Derna disaster and how the Libyan people and politicians in the country came to help. They forgot their differences and past pains.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. Now, let's move on to the issue of Palestine, which we know right now is the number one issue in the world. In Libya, we have seen, has voiced support to the measures taken by the International Court of Justice to prevent genocide in Gaza Strip through the case presented by South Africa. Now, can you tell us what your country is doing to ensure that the Israeli regime complies with this ruling by the ICJ?
Our country and most Arab, Islamic and even international countries do not have authority over the Israeli occupation to prevent it from committing crimes and make it comply with international rulings. This entity has been evading United Nations resolutions since the year 1948, but our country can use its relations with foreign countries to push them to taking measures and steps against the occupying entity to comply with the decisions of the International Court and stop its crimes.
Thank you for that. Now, Mr. Ambassador, Libya's High State Council has called for cutting ties with those backing the Israeli regime in its war on Gaza. Now, and it's, the council has also called for halting of oil exports to countries supporting the Israeli offensive on Gaza. Now, has Libya taken any specific step in this regard?
Sayyid Mubarak.
Never think that the Libyan state calls for something and does not do it. What distinguishes the Libyan state throughout the ages is that it does not compromise, it commands righteousness and implements it. We must know that Libya, from a practical standpoint, is in a state of complete hostility with the occupying entity, and its citizens are denied any form of recognition, and the normalization of its citizens and its official and unofficial institutions is not permitted.
So Libya is totally opposed to the normalization of ties with the Israeli regime.
Our position is clear, government and people included. We are against this entity and the normalization of it and anything that distracts from the rights of the Palestinian people. By the way, Libya has always been in favor of free causes and with the rights of the people to decide their fate and to stop the injustice against them, whether in occupied Palestine, in Africa, or even in South America.
Libya is always in the news, mostly because of also illegal immigrants coming from Africa and using the Libyan Mediterranean coast to enter Europe. I'm sure this is an enormous challenge for Libya. How is your country handling this issue?
First, I must clarify an important point, which is Libya does not take a single dollar from any European country to prevent immigration or put an end to it, unlike many countries in the world that take money for this, even indirectly, such as aid and things like that nature. As for the subject of illegal immigration, we have been suffering from it for decades. It's a major challenge for our country because whoever sets foot in it does so illegally and exits the same way, and therefore this is a major security and economic challenge. Libya has played an important role in reducing illegal immigration by developing its security and military equipment and confront the networks operating in this field. Illegal immigration is not only a Libyan problem. Let me clarify that Libya is not a country for settling down, but is a transit country. In this matter, it's committed to what is required by the international laws regulating the matter. In addition, it rejects any form of dictations, interventions, or requirements that harm its interests. Especially the rumors about the possibility of resettlement or something like that.
Thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. Now let's move to the oil sector in Libya. You know, Libya is an oil-rich country. And previously, I think in the 1970s or 80s, your production was almost 3.4 million barrels a day. And the current production stands only at 32% of its peak. And Libya, I think, is now 18th in the world in terms of oil production, despite its massive reserves. So what steps have you taken to boost oil production?
During the war, the sector has seen very difficulties, and it was natural at that time. In addition, this sector developed very rapidly. Because of the war, we fell behind in the international market, but we have a realistic plan right now in order to reopen, establish and develop oil fields and refineries.
Mr. Ambassador, we know Libya is an oil-rich country and it has some of the largest oil reserves in Africa, and it once produced 3.4 million barrels a day, but now the production has gone, has decreased significantly. What steps are you taking to increase this production?
During the war period, our energy sector was greatly damaged. This is normal because we were in the vortex of war. In addition, this sector is developing rapidly, and for that reason, we delayed it because of the war. The lack of maintenance of oil and gas refineries delayed us greatly in the energy market, but we have a realistic plan to redevelop and maintain the fields. Opening new refineries will return Libya to the top countries in energy exports.
Mr. Ambassador, now regarding the oil production issue, we know that Iran has attained a level of almost self-sufficiency in oil production. Now, do you plan to use the know-how of Iran in boosting your oil production instead of relying on oil multinationals from Western countries?
We welcome any cooperation with any friendly country, especially Iran, with which share a common history, and the things that unite us outweigh those that divide us with them. Of course, we hope to use the benefits of Iran's experience and try to transfer it to our country. We hope that the level of cooperation between us and Iran will reach this level as our cooperation with the friendly country Italy has.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, our last question. Recently, a Libyan delegation visited Beirut to discuss with the Lebanese authorities regarding the fate of a prominent Lebanese Islamic scholar, Imam Musa Sadr, who disappeared in Libya decades ago. Now, can you tell us more about the fate of this file and how much progress you have made in resolving it?
It is necessary to resolve this subject, especially since it is a legacy left behind by the previous regime. It's also important to develop relations with Lebanon, which we hope that calm and stability will prevail in it. As for the issue of Imam Musa al-Sadr, it is amongst the sensitive security subjects which we cannot reveal everything related to it at the moment, but what I can tell you is that the issue will be resolved soon, God willing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for your time today and for answering our questions in this program. It's been a pleasure having you in our program.
Thank you. Merci. Khayli mamnoun.
And that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. We had a special guest today, His Excellency Ali Juma Lubedi, the ambassador of Libya to Iran. It's Bring It. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear brothers and sisters from all over the world listening to IRB English Radio right now, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran in Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really glad to have Brother Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Ali Nasir with me. Assalamu alaikum, brothers, and welcome everyone. Ali Nasir, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, sir. Great.
Alhamdulillah. And Hassan, how are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
Alhamdulillah. And Hussein?
Alhamdulillah.
Fine.
Alright,
inshallah, today ayah 74 is our main topic. On page 160, top of the page, Surah Al-A'raf. 160, Surah Al-A'raf, ayah 74, top of the page. So, let's listen to the recitation and yeah, of course, we will continue to the Tajweed rules.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. واذكروا إذ جعلكم خلفاء من بعد عاد وبوأكم في الأرض تتخذون من سهولها قصورا وتنحتون الجبال بيوتا فاذكروا آلاء الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين.
Nice recitation, mashallah. Allah Almighty started the story of Prophet Saleh alayhi salam, yes? And yeah, now in this ayah, Allah Almighty wants to remind the people of Prophet Saleh alayhi salam about the story of Prophet Hud alayhi salam and his people. Okay?
Yes.
So Allah Almighty says, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وَذْكُرُوا إِذْ جَعَلَكُمْ خُلَفَاءَ مِنْ بَعْدِ عَادٍ. Remember when He, Allah Almighty, made you successors after the people of Aad. وَبَوَّأَكُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ, and settled you in the land. تَتَّخِذُونَ مِنْ سُهُولِهَا قُصُورًا, you build palaces in its plains. وَتَنْحِتُونَ الْجِبَالَ بُيُوتًا, and who houses out of the mountains. فَذْكُرُوا آلَاءَ اللَّهِ, so remember Allah's bounties, Allah's blessings. وَلَا تَعْثَوْا فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ, and do not act wickedly on the earth, causing corruption. Look, guys, in Surah Baqarah, Allah Almighty beautifully says on in Ayah 30, وَإِذْ قَالَ رَبُّكَ لِلْمَلَائِكَةِ إِنِّي جَاعِلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةً, Allah Almighty has appointed human beings as the caliph, as the successors of himself on earth. Okay, so each nation that comes and goes, they come here and they are the successors of Allah Almighty, like Allah Almighty has appointed them to be living in this world, okay, to show the mercy and the kindness, the power of Allah Almighty, the wisdom of Allah Almighty. Yeah, of course, unfortunately, there are people, okay, who, cause corruption. In this ayah, Allah Almighty beautifully say, O people of Thamud, remember the people of Aad. They were the successors on the earth, okay? They were the residents of the earth. And now you are the residents of the earth. So be good. The Prophet has brought you miracles. Everything is clear. Believe in Allah Almighty. Do not cause corruptions. إِيَّشَأْ يُذْهِبْكُمْ وَيَأْتِ بِخَلْقٍ جَدِيدٍ, remember that Allah Almighty can destroy you all,
yes,
and bring new people.
Yeah.
Alright?
Yeah.
So be careful about it. It applies to all the nations. We had this in history and we will have it as well. Yes? So we should be really thankful to Allah Almighty, not causing any corruptions, and we should invite others as well to do good and avoid corruption. This is our responsibility. So during the Tajweed rules, inshallah, if there was any point, I will mention. So Hussein, could you read this one, this ayah once for us?
Yes. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم واذكروا إذ جعلكم خلفاء من بعد عاد وبوأكم في الأرض تتخذون من سهولها قصورا وتنحتون الجبال بيوتا.
ما شاء الله ما شاء الله.
فاذكروا آلاء الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين.
Thank you so much. Nice vibrations he has in his voice. Like it's called beautiful like vocals he has. فاذكروا آلاء, very beautifully. Thank you, Hussein. That was so nice. I really, really enjoyed it. So وَذْكُرُوا إِذْ جَعَلَكُمْ, make sure it's not إِذَا, إِذَا, we have the word إِذَا, sometimes you might get confused, it's not إِذَا, إِذْ جَعَلَكُمْ, the meaning are different a bit. وَذْكُرُوا, the mad is it wajib to extend or like you can ignore it?
It's jais.
It's jais. Why? We have mentioned it this a lot of times, so just let's review it.
Yes, because the Hamza,
the letter Hamza, you see there,
that
in the word if,
yeah, it's in separate word.
So it's in the word if, it's not in the word
wadhkuru.
In the word wadhkuru, we have the letter waw.
Wow, that is
which is mat letter.
Mat letter.
Three mat letters we have. What are they?
Alif.
Alif.
Waw.
Waw.
And ya.
And ya. So they are used to extend the sound. Now, if we have one of those in the word, like the letter waw in this word. Wadhkuru ends with waw. And we have the letter hamza. If the letter hamza is connected to the word, is in the word which the mad letter is, the mad is
wajib.
You should
prolong it.
Prolong it, mashallah. But if the mad letter you have in one word, like the word wadhkuru, and the hamza is in another word, if two different words, the mad is
jais.
You're not forced to
prolong it.
You can skip this mad. Or if you wanted to prolong it, you can prolong it for 2 counts, 4 counts, 5 counts, 6 counts, as much as you want.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Wadhkuru idh ja'alakum. You can ignore it, you can extend it. But the word khulafa, yes, khulafa, before hamza you have the letter
alif,
which is one of the
mad
letters. Yes, it extends khulafa. You have hamza. Are they in the same word?
Yes.
Yeah, hamza and alif in one word. So this mad is
wajib.
Khulafa. Min ba'di, how do you read it?
Min
ba'di. You see that baby meme? Yes. I call this baby meme, tiny meme. Min ba'di changes to min ba'di, a hidden meme sound. The noon is changed to meme and pronounced meme hiddenly, as if there is a little space between your lips, not letting your lips touch. Pronounce it that way. Min ba'di, Aadin, mashallah, Aadin, wabawakum fil ardi, tattakhiduna min suhuliha, min changes to.
Ikhfa,
yeah, apply the rule ikhfa. How do you do it?
Min suhuliha
Qusuran
Raw
Watanhituna. You kind of apply the rule ikhfa here. Tanhituna. No, it's idhar. وَتَنْحِتُونَ الْجِبَالَ. You don't hide the sound of
nothing. Yeah, no change.
بُيُوتَ. Good. فَذْكُرُوا أَلَاءَ. أَلَاءَ, the mad is wajib, but the word فَذْكُرُوا not. أَلَاءَ اللَّهِ وَلَا تَعَثَوْا فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ. That's all. So, one last point. I ask Hassan, and tell us Hassan about Sila, the stopping sign, and that will be all, inshallah.
Sila says that it's better to continue.
Better to continue. And we have Qila, which is opposite to Sila. It says?
Better to stop.
Better to stop. Good job. So, now I will, inshallah, recite it once. And I want you to repeat after me, inshallah. Okay?
Yes.
So brothers and sisters, dear listeners, make sure inshallah you join us and repeat.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim.
Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
واذكروا إذ جعلكم خلفاء من بعد عاد وبوأكم في الأرض
واذكروا إذ جعلكم خلفاء من بعد عاد وبوأكم في الأرض
تتخذون من سهولها قصورا وتنحتون الجبال بيوتا
وبوأكم في الأرض تتخذون من سهولها قصورا وتنحتون الجبال بيوتا
فاذكروا آلاء الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين
فاذكروا آلاء الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Ahsantum. Thank you so much. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, thanks for being with us in IRB English Radio. See you next session. Stay with us. And that's all from us for today. Wassalamu alaikum. Thanks to IRB English Radio, Sevier International Schools for cooperations. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Welcome to the Israel Watch. In this episode, we address several topics, including the blatant Zionist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. We also discuss the negotiations for a captive exchange deal, holding Netanyahu responsible for its failure, as well as Washington's decision to supply arms to the entity. Additionally, former military and security officials admit the failure to eliminate the resistance in Gaza. I'd like to go ahead and welcome my guest today, Mr. Ali Imrad, researcher and writer. Thank you
for having me.
We begin today with the Zionist attack targeting the Iranian consulate in Damascus, which resulted in the martyrdom of 7 advisors from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Zionist media confirmed the responsibility of the Israeli entity for this attack. Well, Mr. Murad, what is your opinion of Taimir Hayman's expression of the Zionist pain on the axis of resistance and its open front? He actually considered the attack on the consulate in Damascus as a way or a direct way of paying the price.
Since he's talking about paying price speaking about pain inflicted on the Zionist entity, he's in a way acknowledging that those generals, and on top of them martyr general Zahidi, if they weren't making Israel pay this much of price and this much of pain, they wouldn't have been attacked in the first place. So this is an acknowledgement from a high general, though he is retired, but he works in a think tank. He is on the top of a think tank that provides policy papers to the Israeli government. And
well, actually, as we know, the Zionists recently mentioned in media that, according to their information, the consulate was not a consulate. It was, in fact, a military base. What is your opinion?
This is something that Iran decides and the Syrian authorities. It is well known that this is a building for the Iranian consulate in Damascus, in the Syrian capital. No matter what the Zionist liars are saying, what matters in the end of the day, what Iran will provide to the United Nations prior to the meeting that is going to take place to discuss this dangerous terrorist attack on a consulate of a sovereign nation, which is clearly is a violation of the so-called international law, because you, as you can see, up to now, the Zionist entity has put this international law in the garbage in all means, whether by attacking hospitals in Gaza, whether by killing tens of thousands of civilians, and now by attacking consulates and diplomatic buildings
in other countries.
In other countries.
With increasing internal demands to stop the war on Gaza, university professors in Zionist universities signed a petition to President Biden demanding to halt the supply of weapons to the entity due to the genocide in Gaza. Mr. Murad, do these drastic measures from the Zionist academic circles stem from their fears of the current situation in the conflict and the entity's well-being?
Of course, because if you take a look at the universities and historically there would be a block inside those universities, academics or students who have leftist ideas and currents. So they try to raise their voices, but on the real theater, what happens in the end of the day is that the Washington will still provide the Zionists with the weapons. Billions of dollars are being funneled to the defense industrial military complex.
Well, Mr. Murad, as you're mentioning here, I do want to go over to our next lead, which is going to emphasize more on this point. These demands to stop supplying the occupation army with American weapons were met with a decision from the Biden administration to send more fighter jets, missiles, and ammunition. Mr. Murad, how do you interpret Biden's supplying of more ammunition despite Netanyahu's claims of a disagreement on the course of what's going on in Gaza?
I think the history is repeating itself, because if you go back years ago, with the Obama administration, when they had this dispute with Netanyahu concerning the Iran nuclear deal, by September 2016, they were clashing in the media. So in September 14th, the Obama administration declared that they would be aiding Israel, the Zionist entity, with $40 billion for the next 10 years. And the clash continued. What I want to say is that this is how things are being done in Washington, in a way that they split when they are talking about the so-called national security of Israel. They are committed to continue to supply Israel with financial aid, with weapons and arms. And when they talk about tactics, political tactics, disputes concerning some certain issues. No, they continue to talk about it, like what is taking place concerning the Rafah operation now.
Exactly. With that, let's go ahead and move over now to Zionist social media platforms, which are filled with calls for toppling Netanyahu. And here are some comments.
Aja, we must hold elections to save what remains of Israel and to save the captives. Liaga, there is a need to change the regime. We will not allow Netanyahu to waste more time. We want a ceasefire immediately. Sarah, the extreme right-wing government has caused the loss of many captives. We must protest to overthrow this government.
Mr. Murad, where are the protests against Netanyahu heading? As we know, they've gone from peaceful to more violent.
Well, you know, before the October 7th Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, there were marches in the streets of these cities and these settlements. There's a big block inside the Zionist entity who want Netanyahu to step aside, to go into early elections, to elect someone who would take the Zionist entity back to where it was.
Well, as you mentioned, the early elections, Netanyahu actually mentioned this and said that early elections are not a solution, but rather war will be bringing back the captives.
Because, you know, he knows the day he accepts to go to the early elections, he would go home. Because all the polls suggest that Netanyahu is losing. He has been losing since the beginning of the war. And now, right now, in the best case scenario, he would have 17 MKs.
But also the Americans seem not to be wanting Netanyahu at the moment.
Yeah, you know, the Americans know that Benny Gantz has been gaining popularity inside the Zionist entity, and that's why he was invited to the White House. All the polls suggest that the party that Gantz leads is going to lead in the next election, whether it happens now or it happens months later or next year. Because the way Netanyahu is managing this war is convincing more Israelis and more settlers that the right, led by Netanyahu, is taking Israel to a place, to a very dangerous place where there might be an escalation of a wide regional war.
Well, as you mentioned, Mr. Murad, from the elections, let's move over to another crisis, which is the crisis of the Haredi enlistment, which is worsening day by day, and the voices of senior rabbis rejecting enlistment are increasing. The rabbi prefers religious youth to go to prison rather being enlisted inside of the army. What is the horizon on the crisis, in your opinion?
I think this crisis has always been inside the Zionist entity. It has been controlled since the establishment of this Zionist entity. Right now, because the army generals need more staff, more soldiers to be enlisted, because they got thousands of injured and wounded and killed, and you know, psychologically affected soldiers, they need more enlisted soldiers, so they got no more. So they said, we have to go to the Haredi society to enlist from those religious
factors.
So I think this has to deal with the existence, the very existence of Israel, because those Haredis, they compose like 2 million or maybe 1.5 million. We are talking about a huge portion of the Israeli society. So this is going to be the mother of the crisis, I think.
More in Israel, where the protests against Netanyahu, where the families of the captives participate, continue, and they have begun to take on a non-peaceful character and threats of resorting to violence until a captive exchange deal is concluded and Netanyahu's government is toppled. Negotiations are ongoing for a captive exchange deal, highlighting the issue of the return of Palestinians to the northern Gaza Strip, as demanded by the resistance, while the occupation forces persist in rejecting this demand. Mr. Murad, is it possible for the other side to agree to such Zionist conditions?
The resistance has been clear since the first day. You cannot have those hostages or prisoners, Israeli prisoners, without fulfilling the demands of the resistance. Netanyahu, of course, tried to put more factors and more status quo to make it harder to reach a deal, because his real intentions is that all the captives, all the hostages, will die under bombardment, or whether starvation or by diseases, so that he would make the resistance lose this paper, this paper of power, because the resistance has been calibrating the negotiations cleverly and smart, and that's why I think the streets are being filled with protesters every day, protesting and demanding that Netanyahu would leave and leave the issue of negotiations, because his real intentions are not to reach a deal. He doesn't want to reach a deal because he is using the starvation as a weapons as a weapon of war in this negotiations, and he is trying to tell this, the Palestinians in Gaza, that you cannot return to the northern part of Gaza Strip unless you return those hostages. This is not going to happen.
So Netanyahu has his own agenda.
Yeah.
The demand for Arab forces to be sent to Gaza and the West Bank was made by five Arab ministers who met with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Cairo during his recent visit to the region. Mr. Murad, what implications can be drawn from the leaked information by the Zionist media regarding the request of foreign ministers of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Qatar, and the UAE to send Arab forces to Gaza and the West Bank?
It doesn't tell something new, because we all know that those Arab countries, they want to normalize relations with the Zionist entity, no matter those Zionists are committing genocide in Gaza, no matter there is more than 35,000 martyrs and more than 75 wounded. They don't care to the you know, the feelings of the Palestinians in the first place, and the Arab masses, because they are acting the same way as the American agenda is telling them to act, because they want to reach a peace agreement, emphasize the Saudis and the Zionists, so that the Zionist entity would not take the responsibility as an occupation force in the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip by providing the all necessary means of life, whether it was food or medicine or any means of life that the Gazans will need so dearly in the coming period.
With that, I'd like to go ahead and thank my guest today, political researcher and writer, Mr. Ali Murad, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Till next time, salam.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says its demands will not change as talks for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip are set to resume in Cairo.